Thanks for inviting me into your home. Long haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' basement, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett, and tonight, this morning, we're coming to you live from Coast's Toronto, Canada affiliate, In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010. Happy belated St. Paddy's Day. I see some late-night revelers in paper green hats on the street below my studio window staggering along Richmond Street. Did you know that St. Patrick is a saint in name only? Ireland's beloved patron was never canonized as a saint by the Catholic Church. Speaking of the Catholic Church and the Vatican, and we will be, a couple of months ago, I was asked to MC the North American premiere of a documentary film here in Toronto. The doc is called The Vatican Deception. And I've watched the film twice, and I have to tell you, it's really less of a documentary and more of a suspense thriller. It's filled with political intrigue and subterfuge, with a thread of the supernatural and some spiritual warfare even thrown in for good measure. The film focuses on the fearless and tireless efforts of one man, the late Father Nicholas Gruner, who has appeared on Coast to Coast in the past. And he is, for those who don't know, for many years ran the Fatima Center in Fort Erie, Ontario, about 90 minutes from where I'm sitting. And Father Gruner tried for years to get the Catholic Church to reveal the contents of the mysterious third secret of Fatima. The three secrets were reportedly revealed by an apparition of the Virgin Mary in 1917 over the course of 6 months to three small children in the village of Fatima in Portugal. The first secret or vision was of hell. The eldest, Lucia Santos, wrote that the Blessed Virgin showed the three children what hell was like, complete with the suffering experienced by the souls who were there. The vision lasted only a second, but the children say it was almost unbearable. The second secret the Blessed Virgin showed the young children was a vision in which they learned that World War I, which was going on at the time of the visions, would end. However, another world war would ensue under the papacy of Pope Pius XI, who reigned from 1922 until 1939. Unless that war would happen, unless people stopped offending God, and Russia would be consecrated to the Virgin Mary's Immaculate Heart. Incidentally, in the vision, an omen would be seen in the sky just before the beginning of the war, similar to Aurora Borealis. Now just file that away for later. And that leads us to the third secret, the one that gets all the attention. And before we get into what the vision was, we need to remember that it was placed in an envelope and was not opened until 1960. Although the envelope was opened in 1960, the secret was not made public until 2000, when the Vatican released the text that Lucia had written, or at least part of the text. And therein lies the controversy. The Vatican says that's it, that's all, nothing more to see here, folks. But others inside the church say not everything has been revealed, and in the film and tonight we'll learn to what extent the Vatican went to silence Father Nicholas Gruner as he steadfastly worked towards full disclosure, if I can borrow that term from the UFO ET community. Paul Stark, director of the Vatican Deception, A Prophecy of Hope and the Epic Battle to Conceal It, and Joanna Swords of the Fatima Center will join me in hours 1 and 2 to discuss the key questions that have remained unanswered regarding the mysterious third secret of Fatima, along with the hidden secrets behind the ominous prophecies, as well as contradictions surfacing between popes and bishops. Astana, Kazakhstan. It may just be the strangest capital city in the world. Check that. May just be the strangest city, period. And if you're wondering where Kazakhstan is, let me introduce this former Soviet republic to you by way of a great article that I read recently in The Guardian. Followed by architectural historian, I will share that with you later, but followed, Frank Elbow, the architectural historian, will join us and discuss the hidden complexities and symbols embedded deep within the remarkable city of Astana in Kazakhstan. It's called by some the Illuminati capital of the world. Now, here's that piece in The Guardian. Of all places, why put a city here? From the airplane window, it's more of the same, flat, empty, and endlessly vast. At 30,000 feet, a few lonely lakes polka dot the landscape. There is no evidence of human activity. There are scarcely any trees and few distinguishing landmarks. On and on it goes. Kazakhstan is the size of Western Europe, and so unremittingly flat, it's as if some gigantic plasterer has skimmed the land. Here, wolves outnumber people. Little wonder the Soviets chose this vast emptiness to hide their gulags and their space programs and to test their nuclear weapons. Much of it is radioactive. It's an agoraphobic vision of hell. And then out of nowhere, Astana comes glistening into view, all shiny metal and glass, implausibly rising up from the Kazakh steppe like some postmodern Lego set that has stumbled into the opening sequence of Dallas. Welcome to Astana, one of the strangest capital cities on Earth. Some are calling Astana the Illuminati's world capital, and you'll find out in hours 3 and 4 when architectural historian Frank Elbow joins me. Frank is perhaps best known for his book, The Hermetic Code, in which he reveals discoveries of the Freemasonic symbolism of the Manitoba Legislative Building. Frank Elbow has been called Canada's Dan Brown of the Da Vinci Code fame. And in his new book, Astana, Architecture, Myth, and Destiny, which is a beautiful coffee table book filled with breathtaking photographs of Astana and its structures. But it's much, much more than a coffee table book. The book lays out a foundation myth encoded into the breathtaking architecture of Astana, an omnibus of archaeological discovery, architecture, folklore, and code-breaking symbolism. Astana advances challenging ideas and offers a wealth of fresh insights into the hidden history of one of the most remarkable cities on Earth. And veiled within its pages are secrets and mysteries that reveal a hidden message. The first person or group of persons to decipher its exact wording will win an all-expense-paid luxury vacation to Astana, valued at $30,000. We'll tell you more about that later. Frank Elbow and Astana in hours 3 and 4. Come on in, weary traveler, hang your cloak on a peg. Grab a stool and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I'm Richard Serrett. This is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Paul Stark is a producer, writer, director, and founder of Stark Productions, an international award-winning independent motion picture production company based in Toronto. He obtained a Bachelor of Business Administrative degree from Sir Wilfrid Laurier University and studied film production at Ryerson University. Since 2009, Stark has been researching Catholic prophecies and their relationship to world events. And his latest film is a geopolitical documentary about the current crisis in the Vatican, called The Vatican Deception. Joanna Swords has a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing. After working as a registered professional nurse for nearly 23 years, she retired from her nursing career and went to work for the Fatima Center. She is now in her 20th year of working at the center and is a division manager responsible for international free distribution and shipping, the Volunteer Department Literature Review Committee, and creation of new literature. Welcome both to Coast to Coast AM. How are you?
Hi, Richard. Thank you very much for having us on your show.
Yes,
a pleasure. And hello, Joanna.
Hello, Richard. Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
Let me start with you, Joanna, if I might. For those not familiar with the late Father Nicholas Gruner, who made a number of appearances here on Coast to Coast AM, just give us a sort of a brief biographical sketch of this remarkable man.
Well, his almost the entire priesthood was dedicated to promoting the message of Our Lady of Fatima. About a year after he was ordained in 1976 in Italy, and about a year later he returned to Canada, and he had the agreement of the bishop in Italy to come to Canada and find some work, and he would support himself. And when he returned home to Canada, he was approached by a committee. The committee was called the National Committee for the National Pilgrim Version of Canada, and it has to do with the statue, actually, that's on a lot of our literature. It's a special statue blessed by Paul VI on the 50th anniversary of Our Lady's first apparition at Fatima, and it was assigned, these, there were 24 of these statues blessed that day for the purpose of making known the message of Fatima. This particular statue was assigned to the country of Canada, so this committee was formed. But they were told, you know, get a priest, have a priest, you know, guide you in this work. So they asked Father Gruner to help them with this work. And so he began about a year and a half later, doing the work, starting to promote the message of Our Lady of Fatima. He began traveling with the statue, speaking on the message of Fatima. He started a publication that same year, 1978, he started a publication called the Fatima Crusader. And about 3 years later, he branched off into the United States. And so he's been spreading, he's been doing this work, he did this work actually for his, the entire rest of his priesthood. He was, go ahead.
Right. And why, briefly, why was Fatima and Our Lady of Fatima and the Three Secrets of Fatima, why was that so all-consuming for Father Gruner? Why so important?
Well, the message of Fatima is unique amongst, you know, there are many wonderful church-approved Marian apparitions, but Fatima stands alone. It stands unique. The other apparitions are those approved by the church are considered what they call private revelation. And some would say there's not an obligation to believe those, although there would be some arguments about that. But with Fatima, some things happen that are completely unprecedented. You know, the miracle of the sun and the fact that that miracle, something occurred with Fatima that had never happened in the entire history of the church, in salvation history at all, which is that miracle was foretold 3 months in advance, the day, the time, and the place where it would happen. And that's why that miracle was witnessed by some 70,000 people. So Fatima stands apart from all other church-approved Marian apparitions. It actually imposes an obligation on the church and on Catholics to believe this message and to do what the Mother of God asked of Fatima. And, of course, the entire message itself is all about the salvation of souls, which I'm certain that the other Marian apparitions as well, of course, were always reminders about our eternal salvation. But again, none had a miracle of such unprecedented proportions, and again, foretold, you know, 3 months in advance. And this is what tells us how important this message is, the fact that because it was told 3 months in advance, 70,000 people at least witnessed it. And so it's a apparition of great proportion, great you know, information. It's for the salvation of souls. Our Lady, you know, warned the vision of hell. You know, she showed the vision of hell to the children. We warned about hell. Our Lady, the Fatima message warned about many of the perennial teachings of the Church of the faith, as if, you know, foretelling in advance what's going to happen, you know, down the road, because today, 100 years later, many Catholics don't know the faith. And that's all happened once the Third Secret was not released in 1960 as it was supposed to. Then events began to unravel.
Right. We will delve into that Third Secret because that is what's getting all the attention. Let me get to Paul Stark, producer, writer, director. And Paul, you're a practicing Catholic, correct?
That's right, yeah.
So were you attracted to this story and Father Nicholas Gruner, the late Father Nicholas Gruner's work, as a storyteller, as a filmmaker, or do you have, shall we say, a skin in this game? I suppose, you know, we all do, theoretically, but, I mean, for you, how did you approach this story?
Well, I approached it as a story. That was the primary motivation for me. When I first started looking into it, first of all, I found it fascinating when I started reading about it, that I had never heard about this story before. And, you know, the more I dug into it, the more I realized there's a big story here. I think the fact that I had never heard about it for so many years speaks to how successful the Vatican has been to silence it. And I originally researched it as a drama. I was going to retell the story of Fatima and what happened in 1917. And I've actually written a full-length script about that. I think it's a unique script because it tells the story in a way that it hasn't been told before. It takes into context, three levels of things, activities that were happening at that time. First of all, it tells the story of Fatima itself, which happened in the village of Fatima. Secondly, it takes into context what was going on in the nation of Portugal, which was becoming very secularized at the time. Religious freedom was disappearing. And so that's, that's an important part of the story because, Fatima, I think, happened to restore Catholicism in Portugal. Then at the world level, we had the world war that was going on. So all of these things were happening, and Fatima had an influence on all of those levels. And so my story, it explains all of that. But, coming back to how spectacular this whole story is, I couldn't understand why people didn't know about it. And so,
well, let me just let me jump in because you mentioned that you weren't aware of the story. What part of the story were you not? Did you not know about? You knew about the apparition. You knew about the third secret.
No,
you didn't know about the third secret.
No, I didn't know any of it.
Aha! All right.
So this is what I couldn't understand. I think I had maybe, if anything, I might have heard vaguely about, an apparition that some children saw. I didn't know how many children. I didn't know the details of the apparition. And in fact, as I started researching it, I realized that there wasn't one, but many over the course of the last 300 or 400 years. And I sort of had to sort through, based on what I might have heard, which apparition involved how many children and what kind of miracles.
Right. I want to ask you about the second secret. The revelation was that there would be another war coming. And I guess the way to avoid that was to consecrate Russia, to consecrate Mother Russia, which is kind of a controversial thing for people of the Orthodox faith, because Russia is an Orthodox Christian nation. It certainly wasn't so under the communists, but during 1917, prior to the revolution, it was, and it certainly it is now. So why would Russia need to have been consecrated to the Immaculate Heart of the Virgin Mary? What does that mean, first of all, to be consecrated, and why is that important?
Well, the word consecration, I think for anybody who doesn't understand, it's almost easier to replace it with the word blessing. That might help people to understand it, so to bless Russia. But if you want to look at the exact definition of it, it means to set aside for a holy purpose. And so to consecrate Russia would mean to set Russia aside for a holy purpose. And my understanding of this is we're to understand that God wants to use Russia as an instrument for his will. And so when Russia is consecrated, that's what is going to happen, is that it will be set aside for his will.
Right. And as is depicted in the film, The Vatican Deception, I mean, there have been ample opportunities for the Vatican Church, for the Pope, to do that. And it seems like a very simple thing. You just simply, you bless Russia, you consecrate Russia. And yet it has never been done. Why not?
Well, that's the mystery. And this is the reason why I decided to make this documentary, because from the prophecies, we learned that by consecrating Russia, we're supposed to see a time of peace. It's supposed to be a miraculous time of peace for the world, and it's such a simple thing. So that is the mystery. Why aren't they doing it? And I believe that there are reasons for it. I think the key reason is that there are people who don't want it done. There are people in the Vatican who are against this consecration.
Well, previously during the 70 years of Stalinist and communist regimes there, it may have been felt that by consecrating Russia, it may have been perceived to a, I don't know, a slap in the face to this atheistic nation. Maybe Joanna, maybe you could weigh in on this when we come back on the other side, and we'll continue to delve into the three secrets of Fatima. The third secret. Now, the Vatican says they revealed everything in the year 2000, but as this film points out, that may not be the case. Here's Junkhouse taking us into the break with Out of My Head, we'll get back to more on Coast to Coast AM. We will get back to our conversation with Paul Stark, the producer, writer, director of Vatican Deception, and Joanna Swords, who is with the Fatima Center. This one, I guess you could file in the What Were They Thinking department. This trippy new animation film promoting Oregon tourism. And this travel video seems to suggest a visit to the Beaver State is more like a psychedelic acid trip. The animal-style video shows children riding giant rabbits, frogs reading newspapers, and caterpillars bicycling through the forest. Oh, and the clouds all look like humpback whales. The video is part of a $5 million campaign to boost state tourism, according to Travel Oregon Director of Global Communications, Linnea Gagliano. And you can read more about that in the news section up at the website, Coast to Coast AM, where our webmaster tonight, Greg Bishop, has posted that and many other wonderful little nuggets. All right, back to the Vatican deception in mere moments right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett coming to you from Coast's Toronto, Canada affiliate, In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. And we are talking with Paul Stark, producer, writer, director of the documentary film Vatican Deception, and Joanna Swords from the Fatima Center. Joanna, let me get you to weigh in on why do you believe, or why do you know, the Vatican has simply chosen not to consecrate or bless, whatever term you want to use, Russia?
There's two parts. There's two things. One is what heaven asked of the Pope, which was for the consecration of Russia. The other is what heaven asked of all Catholics. And the Catholics themselves, as we've established, you know, Our Lady showed a vision of hell, both to remind that hell exists, but also to say that more Catholics are going to hell because of their sins, because they're not leading Catholic lives. So she said, you must amend your lives, and she asked other things, pray the rosary daily, offer sacrifices for sinners, make reparation for sin, wear the brown scapular, her livery. In asking this of Catholics, basically warning, you know, because war, you know, at the time World War One was going on, war is a punishment for sin. And so there is a teaching. The teaching is really that when enough of the lay Catholic faithful do what the Mother of God asked at Fatima, then God will give the graces for the Pope in union with the bishops to do the consecration of Russia. You see, the consecration of Russia will bring about the salvation of many souls. But the fruit of that consecration, which is the conversion of Russia, the conversion of the world, and a period of peace given to the world, such as the world has never before seen.
You used the word conversion, which is very different than consecration.
Well, consecration is, as Paul established, is setting aside Russia for a holy purpose. The country of Russia has been chosen by God as a vessel of election, okay, for that holy purpose that Paul's talking about, that to turn the church and the world around. Conversion means, in Catholic teaching, conversion to the Catholic faith. I don't mean the Church of Rome. What I mean is conversion back to, remember that Russia was at one time under the Pope of Rome. They were the Byzantine Rite. The Russian Orthodox were the Byzantine Rite. But they were under, because the church has...
There was one Catholic church before the schism, right? The one holy Catholic and apostolic church. The Orthodox Church
Correct.
Was the Catholic church before the
Correct.
Schism. But so are you calling for the conversion of Russia to become a Catholic country?
Yes. That is the only thing that conversion means in the Catholic language. Russia needs to come back under... I don't mean that they have to become part of the Roman Rite, which is the largest of the 19 church-approved rites. They go back to... They continue, you know, with the Byzantine Rite, but they are once again under the Pope, once again, the few dogmas of the faith that they've rejected, they will once again accept.
That could be a problem. That could be a big problem. That's not going to make the Orthodox Christians very happy. However, I'm wondering, back to you, Paul, and I seem to recall in the film there was an allusion or an inference to maybe another reason here, and that has to do with perhaps it happened during Vatican II or before. But again, I go back to my point about not wanting to upset Russia prior to the fall of the Soviet Union, and the possible infiltration into the Catholic Church by communists. I believe that point is made in the film, if I'm remembering correctly, Paul.
Yes, we do cover that to quite an amount of detail, and so the idea is that communism was. It actually, well, first of all, let's step back a little bit here. When that big miracle of the sun happened that you described at the beginning of the show, it was a few days after that that the Russian Revolution exploded. So the miracle itself almost was sort of saying, okay, and the mentioning, because the children knew that they were Russia had to be consecrated, and they knew about it about 3 months before the Russian Revolution broke out. So when the Russian Revolution did happen and communists became established in Russia, it seems as though that was part of the prophecy of Fatima, that the Blessed Virgin knew that this was going to happen, and that the only way if you can call it cleansing Russia of this communist ideology, which was an ideology that was excluded God, the only way to cleanse it was to consecrate it. And I think that's my understanding, is that that was the whole purpose of this prophecy and the request to consecrate Russia.
But as to why it didn't happen, is it possible because of an infiltration into the Catholic Church of communists?
Yes, and this is the thing. It was in the 1920s that this infiltration actually started to happen, and so by the time you got to the Second Vatican Council in 1960, these people had worked their way up into the hierarchy from priests in the seminaries. They got ordained, and then they some of them moved their ways up to bishops and cardinals, and they were all infused with this new doctrine in their ways of thinking, and so they are now in positions where they can influence the people around them, and they hold key positions.
Now, I want to talk also about, again, coming back to Father Nicholas Gruner, who has a huge presence in this documentary film, The Vatican Deception, and this is where, again, it's part thriller, it's filled with political intrigue and subterfuge, and you document the extent to which the Church tried to silence and strong-arm Father Nicholas Gruner. Talk to me a little bit about, the opening sequence, in fact, in the film, Paul, and then I'll get Joanna to weigh in on that as well.
Yeah, and Joanna can give some interesting insights into that. Because you're right, when we open the story up, we start by showing some evidence that there were some doctored photos from St. Peter's Square, where Father Gruner was attending one of the papal audiences, and it's a custom for the Pope to come around and bless statues. In this case, Father Gruner was there with his statue of Our Lady of Fatima, and there was somebody else there with another statue as well. And the Vatican photographers were taking photographs, as they usually do for these sort of events. And so Joanna can probably fill us in a little bit on this in a minute, but when she went to have a look to purchase copies of these photos, she was wondering, why aren't we seeing Father Gruner in these photos? I know he was there, and we have the video of it. We were taking video from a different angle, And you can clearly see Father Gruner there. You can see the Pope Benedict the 16th coming around and blessing the statues, but he's not in the photos. So when we start the film off, we show these doctored photos, and we show the evidence, and then later on we get into an analysis of the photos to show from an expert why we know that they were doctored.
Joanna, did you want to weigh in on that as well?
Yes. I mean, Paul is absolutely correct. I was there that day as well, and so when I went to purchase the photos, I kept looking through, and they kept, you know, there was a whole segment of them, and I kept saying, but where's the photo with Father right there when the Pope is blessing the statue? I couldn't understand, so I purchased the photos, bought them back, and then immediately it was sent for analysis because it was obvious that Father had been, what do they call it, photoshopped out, and he was missing from there. And, you know, this is one of many, many instances where the Vatican or and others, enemies within the Church who want to silence Father Gruner, have tried many different things. This would be another thing that they would try, to just anything to take away from Father being present. You know, they've done things in the past. As you know, they attacked Father in the shrine at Fatima years before.
They physically attacked him. He was beaten, correct?
Physically attacked him, yes.
Tell me about that. Who was responsible?
I believe in the end it came down to that they got somebody to admit that it was under the order of the rector of the shrine. The rector of the shrine at the time.
The Shrine of Fatima. So
the Shrine of Fatima, yes, I'm sorry, yes, I should have made that clear.
So the rector of the Shrine of Fatima ordered two people to beat him.
And who would the director of the shrine have answered to?
Technically, I'm not sure, Paul. He would be under the bishop, or is the bishop of the area, or does is he directly answer to the Pope? Because it was the Pope who relieved him of duty after the desecration of the shrine in 2004.
But so that's the mystery. We don't know where that order came from, but it...
How high up, in other words? Did it go all the way to the bishop, in other words?
Exactly, or it might have even been higher. Could have been a cardinal, Cardinal Sanchez, for example, possibly.
Why go to all of this trouble to... I mean, Father Gruner was a priest in good standing. Yeah. Why were they so irritated, upset, angry with him that they would... A, bothered to spend all that time and effort to Photoshop him out of some pictures, and then to actually have him physically attacked and beaten?
Well, that shows you the extent to which they are so against the message of Fatima. And this is why I think everybody needs to ask themselves this question. Why is the Vatican going so far out of its way to silence Fatima when... It's a church-approved prophecy. They approved the prophecy, and yet now they're silencing it in ways. And so I think if you dig into it, like the documentary does, and this is what we do, we dig into it as much as we can to try to ask the right questions and to show to people that there's a reason behind this. And the reason is quite large. We're talking about a story that involves the Catholic Church. It involves an apostasy, which is an abandoning of beliefs, and it's happening all the way at the top of the Catholic Church. And the Fatima prophecies, they seem to be referring to this apostasy. They seem to be predicting that this time was going to come, and that's the motive for the people at the top levels of the Church to not want this to come out.
And it comes down to the third secret, correct?
That's right.
And okay, so we need to talk, obviously, about the third secret. But first, let me just back up and ask you about Sister Lucia Santos. She was one of these three children. She was the eldest, I guess, of the three. The other two were her cousins. And she later became, was it a Carmelite nun?
Yes, first a Dorothean and then a Carmelite.
Okay, so she became sort of, I guess, the spokesperson for the three, And tell me about this, what she did with this third secret, and why she decided to release it when she did.
Well, so for many years she didn't talk about it, and there came a time in the early 1940s when her bishop started asking her specific questions about the time of the apparitions, and the responses that Lucia started writing out. Because that she had had time to learn how to read and write, and so she was able to start writing down this information. And the bishop was asking specific questions about what happened and about, you know, what her family was like and what her mother and father were like and her cousins. And it was then that she started writing these answers out in what they called her memoirs. And so, over this time period, she wrote, I think it was about six different memoirs, and it was in the third and fourth memoir that she starts referring to these secrets of Fatima, and she started to write them down. But there was something about this third secret that was causing her great difficulty. She couldn't write that down. There was something that was just far too horrific for her to write down. And finally, she was asked by the bishop to write it down. And again, she still couldn't write it down. She said, because it has to come in the form of an order from you. I can't take this responsibility to write it down myself. If you order me to write it down, then I can say that this was the will of the hierarchy of the church. And then I'll have the authority to write it down. So when the bishop said, okay, I'm ordering you to write it down, even then she still had difficulty, because there's something very horrific in this story. We don't know what it is. It hasn't been published, but there's something that's very difficult for her to write down.
Was she writing it from memory, or was she being aided by further apparitions of the Virgin Mary?
Well, I think the apparitions were ingrained in her memory. I think she... If you think of how spectacular the event was in 1917, it's not an event that she would forget, because it was so...
I don't imagine. No. It'd be a download, sure.
Yeah, that's right. It was ingrained in her thoughts. Now, she did have other apparitions, though, after 1917. The Blessed Virgin said she'd return to ask for the Five First Saturdays devotion and for the consecration of Russia. So she did come back for those things, and there were other apparitions as well, I believe. But you know, it didn't stop after 1917. And
right.
She did
but
get...
Why the decision to place the third secret, her text, in a sealed envelope and with orders not to open it until 1960? Was that on the order of the Virgin Mary? Was that an arbitrary date?
So that's a very interesting question, because if you look at what the Vatican published, the Vatican says that they asked her if it was an arbitrary, or if it was the Virgin Mary who requested this. And the Vatican says that Lucia's response was, no, Our Lady didn't ask for the date 1960. I chose it arbitrarily. So that's what you find on the Vatican's website regarding the message of Fatima. But if you look at the envelope that the third secret was placed in, the envelope itself says that the Blessed Virgin requested, by order of Our Lady of Fatima, this letter must be opened in 1960.
So well, 1960 is, excuse me for the interruption, 1960 is very important, as we'll find out after the break. That's sort of the beginning of the Vatican II Council. I'm wondering if there may be a tie-in there. We'll resume our conversation on the Vatican deception. Here's July Talk with Guns and Ammunition right here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us.